Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Mobile hunters, are you looking to make the move to saddle hunting this year? Or maybe you just want to add a few new pieces of gear or upgrade your current saddle gear. If that's the case, then head over to tetherednation.com where they've got all mobile hunters covered. Whether you're new to saddle hunting or an old timer, Tethered is your one-stop saddle shop. From saddles to ropes, sticks, ascenders, whatever it is you need, they have you covered. I've personally been using their gear for the past three seasons. Now my base setup consists of the Phantom saddle and the Predator platform. And if you're wondering why I've chosen to use their gear above all else, here's the cliff notes. They're innovative and pushing the mobile hunting forward overall. They cut no corners and prioritize the safety and performance of their gear. They care about the community that they've created, and their gear allows me to hunt free. And above all else, I like to support good people doing good work. If you're interested in upping your mobile hunting game, then head to tetherednation.com. This podcast is brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. Skull Brew Coffee roasts premium single origin coffee, guaranteed to deliver the freshest coffee directly to your doorstep. The kicker? They're 2% for conservation certified and donate 10% of their proceeds back to organizations who support the interests of our hunting community. So go to skullbrewcoffee.com and pick up one of their 3-killer roasts and fuel your hunt and fill more tags with Skull Brew Coffee. Welcome to the Truth From the Stand Deer Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. I'm your host, Clint Campbell, and you're listening to episode number 233. Today is part number two with the UP Bowhunter, and we're covering everything from hunting mornings in October to dirt road deer tracks and more. So stay tuned. What is up, everyone? Happy Wednesday to you. Hope you are doing well. Hope you are feeling fine. It is a hot one out there today. Man, I hope all you cats out there listening didn't have... I'm recording this on a Sunday. We actually had our first farmer's market kind of weekend of the season this weekend with Skull Brew Coffee Company. And it was a toasty one. And the only thing I could think of that was... Look, I like being in the deer woods as much as the next guy, hanging trail cameras and stuff like that. But this was one weekend that I was glad that I was not out doing that. And I was glad that I got out a little earlier, got my trail cameras up. I still have a few of them that I need to get out, unfortunately. So I am going to have to bear some of the heat. Some of the hard to reach places, though, I set up cell cameras and stuff like that, so I wouldn't have to venture back in during the sweltering summer months into some of those harder to reach areas. Most of the ones I need to hang now are probably some of the, you know, none of them are too terribly easy, I guess, but the easier of the bunch to get hung. Also, it made me kind of think of my buddy, old Chad Sylvester from Exodus, because every time we go scout together, it never fails. We'll go scout together wherever we happen to be hunting, you know, whether it's Ohio, whether it's West Virginia, whether it's Missouri, whatever and wherever it might be. You know, he'll pick a date, you know, because we try to jam it in between, you know, his calendar essentially, because they have a lot of, you know, Exodus puts out a lot of content, so they got a lot of things booked up and travel and stuff like that, to, you know, to record their white-tailed cribs and all that stuff. And so usually, you know, they have a really busy spring, and so usually our scouting trip gets pushed to like sometime in July and sometimes even into August, when it's just like stupid hot out. And it never fails, he picks like the hottest 3 days of the entire summer to go scout. I mean, and I kid you not, every time we've gone, it's been, you know, I think the low for any one of our trips was in like the low 90s was the low temperature on any one of those. The first time we actually went and scouted together, and we might even told this story when we podcasted together, but it was the first time he and I ever scouted together. We didn't really even know each other. We met each other on he was on the show, he was on the podcast. We were tent camping, and it was like 96 degrees, 97 degrees, whatever it was, and just like 100% humidity and miserable, and we tent camped for the weekend. And that was our introduction to each other. So, you know, I guess the moral of the story is that we were both probably pretty miserable, bug bitten, and we didn't want to kill each other. So I think that kind of cemented the fact that we could probably hunt together and hang out and not want to kill each other on hunts. So that was where the bond was initially made, was over sweltering temperatures, scouting gnarly clear cuts, and just getting torn up with briars and bugs and whatever the case is. Anyway, going off the rails here a little bit. I'm not going to belabor this up front here today. We're just going to kind of get jumped into today's show. Have part number two for you guys with the UP bow hunter. So we did part one, I guess it was 2 weeks ago. Got to know the UP bow hunter a little bit, talked a little bit about his upbringing and stuff like that. Today, what we're really going to do is dive more into specifically how he hunts and how he likes to get after it. You know, most specifically, he does travel a fair amount, so we talk a little bit about that. You know, where we're going to pick this episode up, kind of in progress, of course, in the midst of our conversation. And what we start to dive into first here really is kind of talking about mornings and hunting mornings in October, because it's something that I want to get better at overall, and it's something that I try to do my homework and get better at it every year. You know, because there's a handful of guys, man, that, you know, that I know that just have a knack for, you know, killing good deer in October. And you'll hear some guys say this, and, you know, I've talked to Tony Peterson, not, you know, to foreshadow, but, you know, an episode coming up here with him in the next week or so. And he's a guy that likes to get after it also in October, especially when he's traveling, cause he can avoid a lot of that, a lot of the out of state, I guess, travel pressure, so to speak. And, you know, and if you can find deer, you know, maybe glass deer or whatever, you can kind of pattern them and stuff like that. I'm just not confident enough in my ability to go somewhere and pattern these deer in a short period of time and stuff like that, to where it's like I really try to utilize, you know, their making mistakes during, you know, that pre-rut time frame to give me an opportunity. But, you know, if you're a guy, you know, that can, you know, pattern a deer and get on deer and, you know, find their beds and understand where they're going to eat and play those, you know, terrain features to and from and stuff like that, man, you know, that early part of the year can be a great time to kill a good deer. The mornings for me are just the parts that are exceptionally hard. And what Greg will say, and UP kind of says this as well a little bit, and what Greg has said to me is like, you know, if you know where the destination food source is and you know where he wants the bed, you know, you just got to be there whenever he's going to be there. Like he's going to get to that bed at some point. Right. And there's a lot of things that go into that, right? Wind, like all those things, there's like some studying that has to occur, but I'm just not, my skills are not refined enough yet to make that play. But we talk a little bit about that in this session, travel bow hunting. And then another thing is too, is just like whenever you travel, we talk a little bit about his, I guess what we would call his hunt to scout ratio, you know, how much he's scouting versus hunting when he's traveling out of state, especially if he's going into a place blind and stuff like that. Cause I think we both kind of agree people want to jump into a tree really quickly because they feel like they're there to hunt. And so they want that hunt tree time versus spending some of that time scouting. So we cover all that and cutting dirt road tracks and stuff like that, and just kind of go all over the place. So super cool session with the UP bow hunter. I hope you all dig it. And as always, I want to thank you all for listening.
I'm a morning guy.
So it's funny. It's funny because you and Greg both are, and that's the thing, you know. And Cody DeQuisto is, right. Like it's like there's a handful of dudes I know who are morning guys, and like I'm trying to be,
You know, it's, I'm not there yet. That's one of the things that I constantly is on my list every year of getting better is like hunting mornings, especially in like October. Right. Cause that's, you know, people will tell you like, that's the worst time to hunt mornings, right? Until you kind of hit that, you know, pre-rut time frame, like sometime probably like after the 20th, right? Like you can maybe start to get away with it. Cause primarily if you're hunting mornings and you're doing it in October, I mean, you're hunting beds. That's, you know what I mean? Because they're not going to get up and they're not moving. I mean, they're moving every day, but they're not going to move too terribly far from their bed at that point. There's just not a reason for them to, you know, biology isn't dictating that. It, you know, at that point, food is probably more so than anything. And so what's your, like, how do you approach hunting mornings? You know what I mean? Like I've talked to Greg about it. I know kind of how he does it. And I've talked to Cody about it. So I'm just curious, like what your approach to morning hunting is.
Well, you definitely got to know, you have to know close to where they're bedding and where they're feeding.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty obvious. I like to be away from where other people are at. You know what I mean? I mean, that's obvious too. You know, you know that I like to use water a lot.
So, right.
You know, so you definitely got to know where close to where they're bedding and, you know, where they're generally feeding from. If you take like this year, I'm not going to necessarily say the state, and Greg are going to that state this year.
Yep.
But it was a velvet hunt. It was a September 1st hunt this year. And, finally on day three, I was able to kill a buck in the morning on September 4th. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, that was basically, I seen where he had came out to go to the food two nights before, and I got the wind right, and I knew the trails that the deer were using coming off of it, and you know, I shot him at the base of my tree this year. But a lot of morning, you got to know where the beds are at, and one of the things, not necessarily exact beds, like, you know, Greg is an exact bed guy.
Yeah,
he likes to know the beds. I think you don't necessarily have to do that. For me, I don't have to. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it has to do with when I first started like getting away from people and trying to find places where other people weren't at. And this is, I guess it's kind of cliche these days. It really kind of is. But when you start seeing 3-year-old and 4-year-old and 5-year-old deer that are coming back to their beds and it's 8:00, 8:30 in the morning, in the middle of October, or even late October or early October, and they're actually coming back to their bedding area, then you know you're doing something right.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can blame it on the moon one day here and there. You know, I know the hunting beast always had a morning hunting days where the bucks are going to be late coming back to their bed.
Right.
But if you're on pressured property, it doesn't matter what the moon phase is. You know what I mean? Like they're going to be in their bed before sunrise if it's really, really pressured. So if you're getting into an area and you're finding areas, you're paddling, you're working harder and you're crossing water and you're getting into areas and you're seeing bucks at 8:30 in the morning, you're shooting deer 8:10 in the morning and stuff like that on a Saturday morning, you're in the right areas. You're doing all the right things.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. You know, and that's the one thing I think, you know, that I did some, well, Greg and I did a podcast after we did it, but we did some scouting together and he was making fun of me because I was like, man, I can never find beds. And I was literally saying that to him while I was standing in a bed. You know, it's like, you know, so, I think a lot of times I was looking for beds that were way more defined than I should have been. Right. And it's sometimes they're really, really subtle. Right. And so there was a couple, you know, there was one particular bed, two beds that we found that we think the same buck was using, and that, like that spot to me, and he and I were talking about it and we talked about it on the podcast, is probably one of the only setups I would have around here for a morning hunt. You know what I mean? Because it's just like, it's really slick access to get in. It's off of a scrape area. There's rubs going in and out of it. So it's clearly he's using it. I don't know when exactly he may not start using it till like mid October or whatever it is. Right. But that's like the one area that I know, you know, that it's far enough away where we didn't see any human sign like around it to where like that buck should probably be pretty comfortable kind of coming and going in that particular area. Now there's some other, you know, there's some other areas, like, you know, there's one place I have some water access and stuff like that. And it's just, there's so much pressure around that. The reason I hunt that is because all the pressure around it, just kind of what I've learned, is kind of shoves deer into that particular area. And so I can slip in undetected, you know, right up in their business, and have some opportunities. But it's that more is more so like a pre-rut hunt more so than anything, because I will get bucks hitting this one particular scrape, you know, starting probably like around the 16th, 17th. In the, you know, either in the morning, you know, late coming back to bed, or early in the evening where it's still daylight out, hitting that scrape. So they're like, they've got to be bedded close, you know?
Right.
Because it's before they're really moving. It's more of like a scrape of opportunity between wherever they were bedding and wherever they're going, or wherever they were and when they're coming back to bed. So those are probably the best opportunities. The best opportunities I have. But it sounds like you, like, you're right. Greg wants to find like the bed, you know, it's like he'll hunt the bed. It sounds like you're hunting.
And that goes back to the Dan days. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what Dan preaches, you know what I mean? It really does.
Mm-hmm. Is it any different if you're hunting, is it any different, you know, do you have a different approach if you're hunting, say, Jersey, your home state, right, where you're maybe using water access, or, you know, and maybe you're traveling to, I don't know, Ohio, and you're hunting, you know, hill country or something like that. Like, is your approach to mornings any different because your potentially your access is going to be different, or is it always kind of the same regardless of
if I'm traveling, you know, like we've hunted Ohio, you know, we hunt Michigan, different parts of Michigan. I've hunted Connecticut and Maine and here in Jersey and stuff like that. But if I'm traveling and I have the week, it's a totally different kind of thing than when I'm hunting home. You know what I mean? Home, I've got some winter scouting in. Most of the time when I go out of state, I don't have a lot of scouting unless it's like, you know, been multiple years in that area. Right. Like Ohio, we hunted Ohio a couple of different years. Mm-hmm. So we hunted basically the same big chunk of forest.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an idea from the year before, but we went in blind the first year.
Right.
You know, my buddy killed a 154 incher. And we, like I said, we all work together. You know what I mean?
Right.
On those things. And I mean, we're individually hunting, you know what I mean? But we're working together. And, you know, my cousin owns a printing shop and he prints us out this big, huge tablecloth. It was a map of the area. It was nice. So sweet. We'd sit around drinking beers around the campfire with headlamps on and on the picnic table, and like, where are you going? Like, I seen this here, you know what I mean? At night, and just it was awesome. Ohio was, we had good years out there.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, when you're going to a state and you have a whole week, like no distractions, I mean, dude.
Yeah.
Like if you're not seeing some deer, unless it's like really hot weather or something like that. I mean,
yeah.
If you got a few years under your belt and you're not seeing deer, you know what I mean? Like you should probably be scouting more to get yourself in deer.
Right. So when you go,
you know what I mean? But
I'm just going to say, so when you go on trips like that, like say you're going to a new piece, right? Out of state, going to a new piece. What's your hunt to scout ratio? Like, do you get there and you just spend like the first like 2 days scouting?
So my brother is generally with me.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, that guy he wants to jump in a tree the very first night. I'll tell him, like, dude, we're spending 2 days, at least 2 days, like learning roads, access points, you know what I mean? And right. Walking. And figuring things on a 8 day hunt or a 6 day hunt, like, or a 5 day vacation with the 2 weekends on either side, kind of deal, like a 9 day hunt or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Like we are spending Saturday and Sunday scouting, you know, and he's basically up by Saturday night. Yeah. I see what I need. I'm getting in a tree. I'm hanging a tree stand. And I'm like, no, dude, we got to have options. You know what I mean? Like, so I like to scout, I like Scott a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With our group, we have about five or six guys. I got cousins and brothers and Navy buddies and, you know, and just a bunch of buddies that are all bow hunters that we generally hunt together a lot. And, you know, basically we're all trying to help each other out. And we'll a lot of times we'll drive around together, you know what I mean, and just get a lay of the new land and just try to, hey, this is what I seen on the, you know, everybody, hey, Todd, let me see your pins, you know.
Right.
And what do you got on X, you know what I mean, to and we'll go over that stuff a lot of times. Like I'll show those guys, hey, these are all the things that I'm looking at. Now you guys can look at all these ones, but these three here are definitely ones that I'm going to. So you guys figure right. your own out, but
right.
you know what I mean? Kind of deal. And sometimes they pan out, sometimes they don't. You gotta be on the ground.
Right.
But I don't necessarily like to spend too much time on the ground because I think you're screwing yourself up. I really do. Like,
right.
I like Clint. I love to go in and hunt when I walk in. Right. You know what I mean? I really, really do. You know what I mean? Like if I go in there, those first few days, and we've never been on a piece like in about like that place in Ohio the first year. We never were on it before. We got there Saturday morning. We drove through everybody drove from all different Michigan and Connecticut and Jersey, you know, and we all got there and got camp set up in the morning, Saturday morning, and then we were all scouting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we drove around. We put like three men in a truck and stuff like that and just go around and scout. Like, I like that. I like this. I'm getting out here. Hey, drop me off here for a little while. I'm going to take a walk up on that ridge. You know, meet me back here in an hour and a half at this little dam right here, or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It just trying to get a lay of the land. And, like I said, we all were in deer. We didn't all see the deer that we wanted to shoot. My buddy, the first year did, he shot that big 200-pound, 154-incher. And he had a bigger one that came in before that, but just a little bit too far for a shot. We were dealing with that year. We were dealing with really hot weather. It was like 79 degrees for most of the week.
That's rough.
It was actually the following year was the same way. It was really weird.
I mean, my feeling is when you go out of state, when you travel somewhere, especially if you've never been there before, if you're seeing deer, like you're winning. You know, like,
yeah,
that's kind of my opinion, but I'm curious for you. Cause I'm probably very similar to kind of how you approach things. Like you know, when I go to a new area and, it, you know, Missouri was an example of that, you know, the year before Iowa was an example of that, you know, you just kind of walking in and trying to figure it out on the fly, you know, I'll typically mm-hmm. start, you know, I follow very much a John Eberhardt method. Truthfully, like whenever okay. I do that kind of stuff where it's like, I'm probably going to go in like as it's cracking daylight, cause I want to be able to see, you know, I don't want to miss anything.
Yeah.
And I'll just
scout. I do a lot of daylight stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And so I'll just scout until I find some type of sign like we were kind of talking about earlier, where it's like, you get a gut feeling, you know, and mm-hmm. as soon as I hit that, I'm like, all right, I'm setting up. And it might take me till 30 minutes before dark to find it. You know what I mean? And I'll, mm-hmm. and I'll set up. And so like, what I'll do is I'll end up like leapfrogging, I call it leapfrogging, where it's like, I'll set up there that night. You know, if I found something decent late, look at the weather the next day. And if I got the right wind to get in there, you know, for entry, you know, and to hunt it mm-hmm. effectively, I'll leave all my stuff there, go back there, hunt that in the morning. Cause now I know how to get there in the dark, you know, so I can get my morning mm-hmm. hunt in and I'll sit there till 9:30, 10 o'clock. And if I don't see anything, you know, then I'm down and I'm moving, trying to find my next spot. And I'll do that for several days until I get kind of what you're talking about, which is like, now I've got options, you know, that I know that there's deer in these areas because I've found sign, you know, and so now I can hunt them accordingly.
Ah, yes. The magnificent Trolley Sour Bright Crawler, also known as Trollicus brightolus. The worm's captivating neon color makes it an easy, gummy prey.
Trolley!
It's a surprisingly sour, invitingly chewy, staggeringly snackable species unlike anything else found on this planet.
Eat me!
Delicious. Visit trolley.com to shop now.
Trolley! Eat me!
That's a good approach. And in Ohio, I did that first year. I did mm-hmm. that. I would go scout I would take a shot at something that I felt good about in the morning.
Yeah.
Never going in there. If it panned out, it panned out. If it didn't, I would get down around 11
mm-hmm.
and then I would do a scout hunt for the evening, and then I would leave my tree stand up.
Yeah.
You know, since then I'm hunting out of a saddle the last few years, but
yeah.
But yeah, no, leave your stuff right in there and then hunt the morning right in the same exact spot.
Yeah.
If you feel that it could be an evening and or a morning spot and you didn't see nothing in the evening, you really have nothing to lose the next morning to go right back to the same spot.
That's just it.
To me, that's a really good approach.
Yeah, that was just it. It's like
if it's not panning by 9 o'clock in the morning, the following morning,
yeah,
get the heck out of there and reset everything and get on something different.
Yeah. So whenever you're hitting these spots, like, man, what kind of sign are you looking for? Like, what do you want to set up on? You know, for me, just like the way I am, it's like Greg loves him some rubs, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like he will hunt the shit out of a two-way rub line, you know, like me, it's like, yeah. I typically don't, like, I'm more the guy that's like, I'm looking for like a hammer scrape area and maybe in depending on the deer density and stuff like that, it may not be a hammer scrape area. It might be a good scrape for that particular area. That's like in bedding cover, licking branch, you know, and just feels right where maybe a couple things are coming together. That's more my style. You know, I'm just curious for you, like when you're out there scouting, you're kind of looking around, man, like, what are you looking for? Like what sets off your spidey senses and says, okay, yep, this is it.
So a new piece that you're not familiar with at all.
Right. Yeah.
For the very first place the first thing that I'm looking for, and it's very basic, but I'm driving dirt roads and I'm looking for big tracks crossing roads. You know what I mean? That's going to be my starting point. That's going to be my start. And if I see that and then you see the direction of it and you kind of figure, okay, was that last night? Where's he going? Where's that big track going and where's it coming from? You know what I mean? Yep. Try to figure things out, backtrack it or go which way he was going or go back, which way he was, you know, whatever way. And if you can find another set of tracks going back and forth or two sets of his tracks going across over the last couple of days, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those are, that's very basic, but it's a lot of people may not know that, but yeah, I'm going to start with that kind of stuff.
Right.
I'm going to go looking at those pins that I dropped from just regular e-scouting. Mm-hmm. And then when I get into those places, if they look, my spidey senses are tingling, you know what I mean? And I get in there and I'm seeing runs and I'm seeing scrapes. A lot of it has to do with weather. If it's raining, mm-hmm. or it has been raining and that scrape has been freshened or it hasn't been freshened and it is raining right now. And you know, it looks like it's definitely a scrape that's been opened more than once. It's not just a, you know, like a frustration scrape or whatever you want to call it. Just the time of year, a 2-year-old scrape, you know what I mean? Where he's just opening up a scrape just for whatever reason.
Right.
Like if it's a permanent scrape there, mm-hmm. and it hasn't been opened. I mean, man, you really got to think about, if the rain's going to break here in a couple hours or, you know, I should probably be around the scrape or,
yeah.
You know, I personally, when I find signs, I don't need to go a whole lot farther, Clint.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I really, 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 the thing that I worry about the most, I mean, first I worry about the regular, which way the wind is coming and the thermals and all that stuff, but I worry about that, my ground scent. Mm. I mean, that's almost number one. You know what I mean? Like, nothing's going to screw you up more than walking across your sign that you think the deer is going to come to you to, and you're, you know what I mean? Like, you're 20 yards from, he's going to hit your ground scent before you ever get a shot at this guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? So when I walk into a place and I'm coming up on sign and the sign, everything is just like, oh, this is feeling good here. This is feeling really good. And I see this and I see that. I seen the tracks down below, down the road. And the trail he was on is coming up here. And I've seen his tracks coming up this hill or this, you know, run here. And all of a sudden, boom, there's a scrape and there's rubs. You know what I mean? If I keep going, am I walking past it? Am I putting my ground scent in there and I'm just screwing it up? Like, why am I doing this?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. if you overwalk it, you're going to kill it. And it's not going to be a good hunting spot to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I think a lot of guys over scout do sometimes, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And they'll go too far. Like, you walk past the sign to try to get the better sign and you actually screwed up the sign back behind you because you walked through it all.
Yeah, it's I've been guilty of that in the past. It's funny you mentioned that because that was probably one of the big learning experiences for me was once I stopped walking past, like it's partially fear of missing out, right? FOMO, right? Mm-hmm. People have that fear of like, what's over the next ridge? I'm guilty of it. And
right.
But it's okay, in my opinion, to be guilty of it when I'm scouting because it actually is the thing that makes me walk further and check more stuff, right? But mm-hmm. during hunting season, you know, when I'm hunting, and it might even be a place that I'm familiar with and I'm just, you know, not sure where all the signs being laid down. Maybe it's not exactly where it was last year and I need to kind of figure out where things have kind of moved or whatever the case is. A lot of times I used to kind of walk by sign thinking that there was something better. And oftentimes mm-hmm. what I had walked by was actually the spot. And once I stopped yeah. doing that and started, once I saw a fresh sign or hot sign or whatever I thought for that area was good, you know, cause it's all contextual, mm-hmm. right? It's like depending on where you're at. Like if you're in a piece of big woods somewhere, it's like, I've seen world-class deer make small rubs and small scrapes, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And know that yeah. they're there because I have trail camera data that tells me that they're there. You know, and so mm-hmm. you have to be able to kind of understand what you're looking at in context of where you're at, where you're hunting.
Right.
And so first I think you have to know that, and you can find that out whether, you know, try to make some friends that live in the area and they don't have to tell you like where they're hunting or whatever, but just qualify what you're seeing, validate it. You know, that's the big mm-hmm. thing for me whenever I'm hunting a new place is just try to find someone who's familiar and say, hey, I was out scouting and I saw this, this, and this, is this, would you classify this as a good sign? You know what I mean? Or would you look for something bigger and better, you know, just so you understand like what people who have familiarity with that spot, you know, what they know mm-hmm. about the area. But as soon as yeah. I stopped passing that sign and setting up on it, encounters went up like tenfold, like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and go ahead.
Mm. Well, and the thing is too, like you're in a new area. Mm-hmm. You've never been there before. You're hunting it. You're in an area. So like, okay. So you throw a hunt at it. If it makes your, first of all, like you said, if it's making your spidey senses tingle, you know what I mean? There's a reason, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. something's telling you, go for it. This is it. Don't second guess it. Do it.
Yeah.
Okay. It may not be perfect. It may not be right. Okay. But you didn't screw it up. You only went to that edge and you stopped and you put a tree stand up there or you got in your saddle and you hunted it. If you feel like there's signs past there, then go in there the next day. You know what I mean? It's not going to hurt nothing to go farther. Yeah. You didn't screw nothing up.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, but you could screw it up if you go too far.
Right. Right.
So, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You got to think about it. Like, we're talking about a out-of-state hunt here. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds. And you've never won any of this before. You don't know anything else. This is. You did your preliminary scouting day one and two, maybe. That led you to this. Okay, I need to go up on that ridge up there. And you went up to that ridge, and then boom, with your saddle and your sticks, and you run into that sign, and you're like, ooh, 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 I'm not stepping over these trails. I'm just holding on a second here. And you just take a look around. Like, what's going on here? Where's the edge? Why are the deer here? Why is that scrape there? You know, before you go any farther, just take your time.
Yeah.
Take your time and just look around and just, okay, listen, I don't think it's going to, okay. Look, I don't need to go any farther. This is better than what's over there. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I can tell you right now by looking over there that there's not a whole lot more deer sign there. Right. You know what I mean? Because that's open hardwoods or that's whatever it is. You know what I mean? Just read it. Like, but if you stop there and you look around and you say, I don't know. Maybe it's better over there. Look at that. That's an aging clear cut over there. I need to go there. And okay, then walk through it.
Yeah, I think that's important is just, you know, having some patience and asking the questions why in the moment. I think a lot of times, like, you're so geeked up that you found some sign and you start to make poor decisions, you know, immediately mm-hmm. after seeing that. Yeah. And I've certainly been guilty of that. And I think, you know, as I've started to learn to like pause, and I'll literally do what you're saying. It's like, it might take me 20 minutes just standing there looking around to figure out which tree I'm going to get into, you know?
And there's not a thing wrong with that, Clint. There's not a thing wrong with that. That's actually good hunting. You're actually reading the sign and you're doing what you should be doing. You're using all the experience that you've earned.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you're using it right. You know what I mean? Like, take a minute. Take a minute and stop.
Yep.
You know? What would Johnny Stewart do right now?
Right. You know what I mean? Like, that's a great.
What would he do? What would Greg do?
Right.
What would these guys do? And you know, I got to throw this out there. I like Johnny Stewart. Me and him, you know, we're following each other on Instagram now. I don't know him. I love listening to him on podcasts and all that stuff. And Greg has got mad respect for him.
Yeah.
But my Johnny Stewart is DJ Rutledge. He's a local guy here.
Okay.
He is. If I got to learn from anybody, I've learned more from him just sitting around. And DJ Rutledge, and I'm telling you right now, if DJ and Johnny Stewart, if you put those guys in a deer camp together, they would hug each other. They would say about four words to each other. And then all they'd both have a beer or whatever, and they'd look at each other and they'd probably give each other a hug.
Right.
A big man hug and say, "Where have you been, brother?" Because they're exactly. Speak the same, they're exactly the same person, and like I said, I don't know Johnny,
right?
I don't know him. I just from what I've heard him talk, but DJ talks exactly the same way, and he is a killer. I've never met a man that kills. He'll tell you, Todd, and he's not saying it in a egotistical way because he's not egotistical at all. But right. He will say, God put me here to kill critters, Todd, and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's some cats like that, man. And that's, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like Johnny Stewart is one of those cats. But you know, the one thing going back to kind of like qualifying what you're seeing without busting it up, it's like one of the things I even started doing was when I see sign, like if I can, right, I won't even necessarily walk over to it. I'll look and see, like, can I stand on a stump or something like that where I'm at? And can I use my binos and look in the scrape to see like if it's fresh or not? You know what I mean? Or can I see a track in it? You know what I mean? Or whatever the case is, like I'll go that far. So I don't have to move any further. And then if I'm like, yep, it's fresh, or I can see fresh paw marks in it or whatever the case is, then I say, okay, I'm now hunting it. I've made the decision that now I just need to figure out which tree I'm going to get into and figure out. And then you just kind of look around and figure out where the deer are going to come from, make an educated guess on that. And I'm going to try to set up to take my best shot opportunity from where I think they're going to come from.
That's absolutely perfect deer hunting in my book. That's absolutely perfect deer hunting. And it goes back to like what I was saying earlier about the experience. I can go in with a headlamp, and this isn't being egotistical at all either, but I can go in with a headlamp. And I've been here before with a headlamp and never been in this place, but I've seen this, this, and this. And like we were talking about the edge, and I'm not going in the opening. I'm going to cut back into the woods downwind of where, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And then cut back over to that, to a good tree that's on that opening, on that edge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and that's what that's about. That's about not going in there and contaminating an area you expect deer to come through.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, 100%, man.
That's good deer.
Yeah.
That's good deer.
And it's something you just have to, like, you know, you have to stop and think. I mean, there's plenty of things still that I run through and I don't think about in the moment. Right. And it just, as you do it longer, you start to think about, your mind starts to slow down. And I kind of equate it to, you know, athletes who, you know, get in the zone, so to speak. Right. It's like, you know, you always hear football players say, you know, there was a small window of time in my career where my mind matched my physical capability. Right. It's like, cause early in their career, they were, you know, they're young, their bodies aren't failing them. And they're just like, physically they're a freak, but mentally they don't know the game yet. Right. They don't know the game properly yet. Right. And then they hit this point of their career where it's like, they're almost as smart as they're going to be. And they still have enough physical capability that the game slows down for them. And that's like the peak of their career. Right. And then on the back side of their career, they know more about the game than they've ever known. Right. And know exactly what they need to do, but their body won't allow them to do it anymore. Right. And so they have that small window of like where everything kind of comes together for a moment. And to me, that's kind of how I think about like my bow hunting journey. Right. And not that like I'm going to be over the hill or anything like that, but that the game slows down for you the more you do it. And you'll hit these different moments. At least it's been that way for me, where different things start to click. You know what I mean? And it slows down for me. And the big one for me was when I didn't have to think real hard about wind and thermals anymore. When I could walk into a spot and kind of knew what was good, and I knew what was roughly going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, I knew what my prevailing was. I knew what my thermals were going to do at different times of the day. So that means this is how that deer is probably going to use it. And this is probably where I need to be set up. Right. And so, you know, and I understand that now, and it clicks for me. The part that I still don't, that I'm still not great at, that Greg is really good at, when we were scouting together, it's like he sees something and he immediately had three trees picked out. And he's like, where would you set up? And I was like, maybe this one. He was like, you know, and yeah. It's like, and so I was looking around and I finally like looked and I was like, okay, I was like, maybe that one. He's like, that's one of them, you know? And I was like, oh Jesus, man. I was like, I didn't know you had three. I was like, I got one. I'm good with that one, you know? But he had already picked out three scenarios that he could potentially set up in. Right. And he's really looking for back cover and, you know, and all the things that I'm kind of looking for, but he just sees it differently and more quickly than I do. Do you kind of, is it the same for you? I mean, can you kind of like pick out your setups and stuff like that? And what are you looking for in a tree setup?
So things have changed a lot for me in the last 4 years because I switched over to traditional. This is going to be my fifth year.
Okay.
So I went from a 60 yard radius to a 30 yard radius.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 4 years, and it hasn't hurt me one bit. It's actually been great. Last year I killed three deer and the farthest shot was 4 yards.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So yeah. My setup's got to be, I have to think about, okay, I want to be like 15 yards and in, you know what I mean? That's for me, that is a dead deer,
right?
15 yards. If it's too close, it could be a little, I got to think about that shot a little bit more than like a 15 yard shot.
Right.
Because I got, you know what I mean? I got to aim low, but, yeah, so it has. But getting back to what you said about how things just become natural for you and like the thermals and all that kind of stuff. If you really put your mind and if you really think about this, and something really came to mind here, that is basically what a 5-year-old deer is doing.
Yeah.
Like a 1-year-old, a year and a half year old and a 2-year-old deer, they don't know. Exactly how I should enter a place. And if I do enter here and I smell something, like where it's coming from, like a mature buck, when he comes into an area and he smells something, he knows, like, boom, like it's over in this quarter over here is where I should be looking.
Right.
But you know what I mean? Like that's where that came from. And that's experience. Deer get the same. I think deer get the same experience that we do. You know, like you said, I don't even have to think about winds and thermals and all that kind of stuff anymore because it's become natural to me.
Right.
That's exactly why a buck will a mature buck is different than a immature buck. You know what I mean? On how, like, if they come down, they come into an area or something like that, they know which way to come in. And when they come in there, oh, woof, something just hit me in my face. Like
right.
Something just hit me. Boom. And they look over in that corner of that field or that corner of that opening, you know what I mean? Up in the top of that hill or whatever it is. And they know, boom, it came over there. Okay. We're going this way. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's the same exact experience. I mean, humans, like you as a predator, they have the same experience as the prey.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, it totally does. You know, the only thing I would say that I would add to that actually is that, you know, it happens for them so much more quickly because they live it every day, you know? So what might take me, you know, years to figure out, right. As like a guy who's hunted, you know, since he was 12, right. And some of this stuff, you know, just say like even a person that's, you know, hunted all their life and they're in their 20s. Right. It's like a lot of that stuff probably doesn't for very few. I've not met a lot of dudes who aren't in their, at least their 30s where like it's made sense. Right. And it's probably because, you know, guys, we don't mature as quickly as women. Right. We have the hold my beer syndrome until we're probably about 28. You know what I mean? It's right. Like, which is why we don't live as long. Right. So,
right.
You know, but you know, you take someone who's, you know, that old 30, right. And it finally, they figure it out or whatever the case is. A deer's figured that out in 3.5 years, 4 years, you know, and like not just like figured it out, but are experts at it at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's because they live it every day. It's like we often forget, I think, that we're entering their world when we're bow hunting. You know, it's like we are a visitor, nothing more than a visitor, you know, because that's their life, you know, day in and day out. And, you know, it allows them to be next level with that type of stuff. And not to mention just how much more keen their senses are, you know, which is, you know, the icing on the cake, but how to use it, you know, they have a PhD in how to use that stuff. And we're the best that you could be at it is still only going to be a fraction of their capability. And how to understand it and how to utilize it, you know, at least in my opinion, if that makes sense. But, so man, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the time of year. I always like to ask this question, I guess maybe I'll phrase it this way. What time of year do you typically find most of your success? Is it October? Well, is it early season? Is it November, late season? What time frame do you usually, you know, fill most of your tags?
Well, if you look over my whole life, I've been hunting, this will be my 39th year. I started when I was 12. If bow hunting. If you look over my whole life, so I come from a little bit different era than you. You know, there's a lot of guys that are doing the early season stuff now and getting some early and late season stuff. In my time, you were a rut hunter. That's what we did. You know what I mean?
Right.
We prepared for the rut. We took our time off in the rut. We read sign. We looked for rut sign all year round. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's what we were. We were rut hunters. So rut hunting is what was put in our brains.
Right.
My mind, when I generally am scouting, I'm generally scouting for the rut.
Okay.
However, the last few years, I'm really digging the early season stuff. I really am. I've killed a few deer. I killed one, like I said, a few years back, October 7th, was it October 10th in 2019, 2020. Last year, I killed one September 4th. So, and went to Michigan for the opener in October, and very, very close to killing a good buck in the first week of October. So their opener up there. I'm really kind of digging the early season stuff. I never put a lot into it. I wouldn't even like take time off
right
early. It was all about like, hey, I need that first week of October or November. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And to be honest with you, like this year here, November came and I got, me and my wife got diagnosed with COVID, like November 7th or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I was in quarantine for 2 weeks. I was like, perfect. like, I mean, I'm going to the woods. I'm staying in my own truck, going paddling out in the back of a lake. And you know what I mean? And going off in the woods, I was still quarantined and I wasn't going around people. You know what I mean? And,
right.
But I was burnt. But then three states, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ready for that. You know what I mean? I really wasn't ready for that much time off. And I was burnt out. I gave up like the last week of it. I didn't kill anything in November. And I was burnt. I called Greg and said, dude, I'm fried, dude.
Right, right. Nah, dude,
I'm sick of watching spikes and forks walk by. And I know I see all these big tracks in here, but I'm done, dude. I'm just done. I'm not getting up in the morning and paddling back anymore. I'm fried.
Right.
And I put the bow down. I mean, I didn't pick it up until like right at Christmas. You know what I mean? Like, I was done for a while, man.
Yeah, man. I can totally understand, man. I've said this 100 times on this podcast, but both, you know, my buddy Chad Sylvester and I, we both said it's some of these guys claim they could hunt every day. And I'm like, you know, I think some of it's a little bit of BS for some folks. I think there are some guys that can and or would, but my sweet spot is about 2 weeks straight. You know, after that, I need a little bit of a break. You know, I need a little recharge. You know, usually when I take a trip at the beginning of November and I'm gone for 2 weeks, usually when I get back, I need a couple days off. And I don't think taking some time off is bad, man. Even I've learned even on like these travel hunts that I go do, if it's just like a week, then I'm going to just power through, you know what I mean? Cause I got 6 days, 7 days, whatever it is to get it done. But if I'm out on a trip like I was whenever I was in Iowa, that it was 2 weeks, and this past year when I was in Missouri and then in Ohio, and then this year I'm going to Kansas for 2 weeks, It's like that 2 week trip, man. Like there's going to be at least 2 days during that trip where I probably won't get up in the morning and go hunt and maybe just hunt the evening and give myself like the opportunity just to kind of recharge. I've learned that like, if I don't do that, I start to make really, really stupid mistakes that in the end will end up costing me, you know?
Yeah, and you're just going through the motions. You're going through the motions then. You're not going, you're not making sharp. Clear decisions. Yeah. You're not making clear decisions. You're just going through the motions then.
Yeah. And so I've learned, you know, over screwing some stuff up on some of these trips like that to where I'm better off giving myself a, you know, a mental day off or a half day off and sleep in, you know, and being sharp when I'm in the woods than I am to just grind it through because I feel like I have to.
Yeah. And the thing is too, dude, like Clint, things pile up at home. We got to go, you got to take care of things. Too, you know what I mean? You're sitting in the stand, you're thinking about, oh my God, man, I really let this slip, let that slip.
Oh
like,
yeah.
I got to let me get some things done here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you mentioned your scouting, right? You, a lot of times is, you know, you're looking at like rut sign and stuff like that, you know, and I'm always curious cause we talked about the traveling and, you know, and just in general, when you're travel hunting and stuff like that, you're kind of, you know, we hunt similarly in that regard. I'm curious, you know, cause I've talked to people who do this two different ways, right? Some people they'll postseason scout and it's very much, they make a plan in the postseason based on what they've seen. Right. And they're going to work that plan the coming year, not saying they're going to not adapt it. Right. But they're going to work that plan. They've done their scouting. They found 6-7 great spots, just making up a number. Right. And they're going to hunt those spots within reason. Right. They might move slightly or whatever, but those are the kind of the designated areas that they think that what they've learned tells them is where their opportunities are going to be. I've also met guys, you know, and I probably fall a little bit more on this camp where I do my postseason scouting and I get a good idea of like what's going on in an area. And then I'll run some truck cameras and validate maybe the deer that are around and stuff like that. And there might be a handful of spots that maybe there's like a primary scrape with like a hammer licking branch that you're just like, that's getting hit like all year round, right? That's outside of bedding. That might be a place where it's like, yeah, I'm definitely going to hunt that, you know, but I may end up going in there and, you know, out of those 7 spots that I pick out, I may only end up hunting 2 of them during the course of the year. And I will just kind of hop around and find the sign wherever it's being laid down during that time of the year and be hunting those places and never actually make it to the places that I scouted during the off season. So what's your approach? Like how much does your postseason scouting dictate your hunts for the upcoming year?
Well, if we're talking local or if we're talking,
yeah, let's go. You know, let's go local for this one.
Okay, so for local, I mean, it means a lot. It means a lot, especially for local hunting. The postseason, I don't necessarily go into a lot of places that I'm familiar with. Mm-hmm. So I try to expand my horizons a little bit locally in the wintertime. So for the most part, I'm looking for things and I'm going to mark them and I'm going to, you know, I don't want to say it. I'm going to put it in my Onyx and then it's going to be, those are going to be waypoints on the days on Friday nights when I'm sitting here and I'm planning where I want to go, depending on the weather, the wind, where I've hunted and, you know, tomorrow morning specifically. Where I'm going to go. I got till noon tomorrow morning and this is my hunt for the week. I'm going to utilize those pins then. That's basically what it is. It's going to be scrapes, rubs, and, you know, beds, those kind of things for that.
Right.
If that makes sense. It's going to go in my library. It's going to go in my map. And I'm going to, like, I sit here on Friday night. If I got out of work a little bit late or whatever, and I come in here and I start getting my things together and I start looking at weather. Mm-hmm. The wind's going to be doing this and this. Let me look at Onyx. Okay. Got that spot. Yeah. But I've been in there 2 times. You know, I've paddled back in there 2 times this year already. I don't want to go in there anymore. Here and there and this and that. And you start putting together a plan for the next day. But all those pins that you got on your maps are all places that you can go.
Mm-hmm.
unless something is really, really super hot, like, I, you know what I mean? Oh, I found the sheds in there. Mm-hmm. You know, I got a lot of sheds. I find a lot of sheds. If I put something like that where I know there's an absolute monster in there, and I know, well, he was in there in the wintertime, he had rubs, you know, it looks like his, you know, he's got rut sign and winter sign in there. I mean, this dude is living in there. You know, you start, you put a plan together. Like, I think I should be in there in October. Mm-hmm. I should be in there late October. You know what I mean? That's really all that the postseason is for me, is just, I do a lot of shed hunting. I'm marking scrapes and rubs and beds, and it all just goes into my map. Right. You know what I mean? And all that really is, that map is really just a log.
Right.
Really, you know what I mean? That I can draw off of when I'm making a plan on a Friday night.
Right. And I think it totally makes sense. And I think one of the things that you mentioned that, you know, is, you know, I think is important, and something that I do too, is you mentioned when is a particular deer, or when are the deer that you would like to kill using that spot, right? Like that's mm-hmm. That's the ultimate part, right? Is figuring out when they're actually going to be there, right? Because, you know, and one of the things I use to do that is trail cameras, right? Like if it's a new piece to me, I'm going to put trail cameras up on a bunch of scrapes and stuff like that. And then I'm going to watch and see, or if I find beds, I'm going to put them close to beds, and I'm going to find and see, when are the deer using this scrape? Is like, a lot of times you can tell if it's a community scrape, it's being hit all year round. Like those are gold mine, right? But when does it really turn on? Like, I want to know what that date is, 'cause I'm probably not going to hunt it until then. Right. It's like, and I want to know what those time frames are. If a deer is living in an area, right, it's like, well, then, yeah, it's like you try to figure out when is he most consistent in those spots, and, you know, and you want to hunt them, you know, accordingly to that. I guess, let me ask you this way. Say you have a killer spot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know, there's a big deer in an area, right? And say you have some, like, data, whether it's been an encounter a year ago or maybe some trail camera data that says, you know, he's likely in this area, let's just say October 15th is when he starts to be a little bit more consistent, right? Mm-hmm. And say, you know, but you know he's in there often, and you've got the right wind, you got the right weather, and it's a Friday, and you're like, oh, I'm going to go hunt him this weekend, and it's the 10th, right? Because I got the right conditions. But you're walking in, and when you're walking in there, you find a hammer rub that is on a tree that is as big around as your waist, and it's up to your neck. And there's a scrape that was just pawed, like 3 yards away from it. Are you passing that and going to where the deer you want to kill, where you think he's spending a lot of time, and maybe it's a half mile away, or are you setting up on that sign you just saw?
I'm going to set up on that sign. I'm not going to go in there and bust all the rest of the stuff. I mean, to me, that's easy.
Okay.
To me, I'm not going to go bust up stuff. And depending on how far you're saying it is from the new stuff to where he was at, it could be him. Unless he's got some unique points on his brows that would, you know what I mean, or faces or something like that, that would have been, you'd be able to tell on the rubs or whatever. But
Okay.
I'm not walking by that glance.
Okay. And I wouldn't either, man. I'm just curious. Because there are certainly, you know, folks who get married to a plan and they're going to work their plan, you know, because they think that their postseason scouting has told them what they need to know. And look, plenty of people kill deer that way every year. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to poo poo their approach if it's working for them. You know, curious.
Honestly, their postseason planning and their postseason scouting has really actually worked if they walk in halfway in and they hit that sign.
Yep.
It still put them in a good spot. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like they walked in there and, oh, well, maybe I'm not going 2 miles in, I'm only going a mile in, or maybe I'm only going 3/4 of a mile in, whatever.
Right.
But I did walk 2 miles in there in the wintertime, but dude, I got to hunt this first. Like, especially if this is two different bucks, let me try killing this dude first.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I always got the other guy to fall back on if they're two different bucks. Right. And I'm not killing him if he's 2 miles back or a mile and a half back, you know what I mean? Whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah. I'm hunting that hot sign now.
Right.
That's real easy for me.
Right. So you mentioned weather, and you had mentioned, you know, moon phase earlier, where it's, you know, not really subscribing to that is what I kind of took away. You know, mm-hmm. are there specific, you know, what's your, you know, weather conditions that you're looking for? Is there, like, some guys are really into, you know, I know Chad, my buddy Chad, you know, because he runs so many trail cameras and stuff like that.
Yes.
Like, he started creating kind of spreadsheets of wind data, you know, like based mm-hmm. on like trail camera pictures that he's getting and looking at the historical wind data to get wind speeds to see when deer are moving on particular parcels based on wind speed. And he's actually found some stuff that's pretty interesting where he's finds some consistency with deer in this particular area that like to move more often in a specific kind of range of wind speed. And so I'm always curious if there's, like, you know, are you a big believer in barometric pressure? You know, or is there a wind speed that you kind of prefer? Like, what's your take on some of that stuff, and what do you like?
Well, the moon, I think the moon, the funny thing is, man, I've always kind of believed in the moon for feeding times and all that kind of stuff and mm-hmm. activity times. But then there's sometimes that it's just like, it should be perfect and it's not,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? But yet a lot of times when you're driving around and you look out in the field and it's 11:30 in the morning and you look at your hurry up and look at your watch real quick and you look at you look at your app and you're like, yeah, dude, it's freaking perfect. Perfect moon time right now. That's why they're there. You know what right. I mean? Like, what's the other, you know what I mean? But then other times it's not, I don't know if there's a whole lot of consistency with it. I think, for hunting, I think if it's close to the morning, you know, the sunrise and the sunset, mm-hmm. I think you can try to utilize it a little bit.
Right.
The only thing I really think about wind that much is a 10 mile an hour wind to me, like the 8 to 12 mile an hour wind, when you have those winds, they're generally consistent.
Right.
Especially like in November when the leaves are starting to fall and stuff like that. If you have a 10 or 12 mile an hour wind out of the northwest, that's a solid straight wind, and you don't have a lot of, you know, backflow and variables or anything like that. It's generally straight northwest right. all day long when it's 10 miles an hour or a lot. But when you talk about different wind speeds and all that kind of stuff with data and stuff like that, there's been plenty of people that have written about that in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
About different winds and stuff like that, you know, about, you know, if when you're 15, you're just lay down.
Right.
A lot of people say that. I don't necessarily buy that, but, there's been a lot of stuff written about that. I mean, you gotta think about it. Like, I'm 51 years old. When I was growing up, what we had was, you know, we had a couple of VCR tapes and magazines is what we had to go by. So right. we believed everything that we read, you know what I mean? Like, that we believed that stuff, you know what I mean? Like, these guys knew what they're talking about. Now you start to find out, like, no, these guys didn't know anything more than any of us.
Right.
You know what I mean? But they were trying to make a living off of writing, you know what I mean? And so they had some hot thing that they thought they could sell, and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? We didn't have the information that we have now.
Yeah.
Back in those days. We did not.
100%, man. Like, I totally agree. I mean, where I grew up, I mean, we didn't have like cable or so there was no like outdoor channel or anything like that. So I didn't even read hunting magazines growing up. That wasn't even like a thing. Like, we didn't even have money for that. You know, mm-hmm. So it was just learning from the old man. It's funny, 'cause like, I'm the same way. I think most people are, as far as like the wind speed. It's like, I want just enough to get like a workable wind, if you will. Mm-hmm. And if I can get just enough to give me a little bit of cover sound too, I'm pretty happy with that. You know, the moon stuff, like, I remember when I first started kind of checking it out and playing around with it, I remember the first hunt I did using the moon, and it worked like almost to like the minute. I saw 2 bucks,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was like, it was early season. We open early where I'm at here. So it was probably around like September 19th or 17th or something like that. Never again had it ever worked. You know what I mean? Like yeah. I used the moon dial that year and never again did I see it kind of actually play out. The one thing mm-hmm. I do find interesting is like, I forget the guy's name now, maybe Justin Hollinsworth. Does that sound correct? I think he's buddies with
I know the name, but yeah, as far as like either side of the moon.
Yeah. 4 days after, I think a full moon, like the mornings, you know, and 4 days leading up to the full moon is an evening. Like that always was kind of interesting to me and somewhat made sense. But I haven't kind of played around with it enough. Like this year was really probably the first year that I really paid attention to it. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that fell like close to the rut, like close to Halloween, if memory serves. So I wasn't sure if I was like, you know, I think it was like, yeah, there's a bunch of activity in general because it was right around the time frame where they're going to really start ramping up their movement.
Clint, over the years, I've listened to everything that you can possibly imagine. And I'd love to say that there's some sort of magical taboo for it, because it would be great if there was, but there is not.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? There really isn't a whole lot of magical taboo. There isn't. You just got to get in there and you got to go learn from the deer and go and do what you got to do. You know what I mean? And you got to be kind of, they can't smell you and they definitely can't smell your ground scent. You know what I mean? That's the one thing I can control all the other things. When they smell your ground scent, there's no rubber boots, there's no sprays, there's none of that crap on the ground that works. Yep. You know what I mean? When they come across your tracks, you're done. And if we start thinking about like your dog goes crazy when it gets close and it gets downwind and it starts throwing its body language. The same exact body language that you see deer do.
Dude, you know what I mean? Like, it's funny you say that because that was like I subscribe to a lot of the same stuff that you kind of, you know, that you do as well, as far as like my scent mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But, you know, it was watching a dog work like that and get downwind of something and be able to work it like that. And then, you know, and I play the wind, you know, when I hunt, and I try to have like the best entry and exits that I can based on wind and stuff like that. But it was just watching him work and then made me stop and think about his nose is a fraction of what a deer's nose is. Right. And if you think for a minute, like, I don't think anything on the market will beat his nose. If I'm being, you know, just being honest, you know what I mean? Like, there's not a spray, an ozone machine, like nothing that's going to beat his nose in the field. I don't think, you know. And so then multiply that by however many you need to multiply it by to get to the sensitivity of a deer's nose. And it's just like, it's game over. There's nothing, you know?
So real quick though, I have an ozone unit and I've been running over the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
In 2019, the deer that I killed, he was probably a 4-year-old buck. He was a 9-pointer.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in, it was about the wind. Let me see. The wind was northwest. It was about 7 miles an hour. I was a little bit higher than him in elevation, probably about, elevation wise, probably about 9 to 10 foot of elevation drop. So he was a little bit lower than me.
Mm-hmm.
I was up in the tree about 17 feet. Had ozone unit running. There was a smaller buck. It was a 10-pointer, but it was a little bit tighter rack. Came through first. They were going to bed and their beds were right there, downwind of where I was at. He started to do like a dog would do, like the first deer that came in was, they were running partners. I seen them 10 days earlier, about 50 yards to the north in the morning hunt. I cut in downwind of where they were a little bit south of it and got in there and got set up in a smaller pinch point where I thought they were going to be bedding. I didn't know where they bed. It was a completely new piece. It was the second time I hunted it this morning here. The first morning, they busted me in the tree. It was my second time in a saddle and I didn't know exactly how to set up and I screwed the whole damn thing up. But anyway, that's another whole thing.
Right.
But I redemption 10 days later, I came back in there, had an ozone unit running. It was only 7 mile an hour winds. They came in from the north and they cut in, and the wind was northwest. They got into like my southeast in this pinch point. The first buck came through. I was like, oh shoot. He come through and he started to do the, like, I'm getting ready to bed down thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a dog would kind of do. And all of a sudden he kind of stuck his nose in the air a little bit. And he was just like, he kind of whiffed it. And he was just like, didn't get spooked, but he was like, it was enough that he said, I'm not bedding here.
Right.
And he was the lead deer. He was a little bit smaller than the deer I shot and just kind of walked off. Like, we're going to go ahead and hit the other bed.
Right.
The next buck came through after that, and he was at 17 yards. Longest shot I've taken with traditional, and boom, stuck him. I don't know if he was going to do something different, but that first lead deer that he was kind of relying on a little bit, the Ozonics kept it. To me, in my opinion, the Ozonics made it so he didn't at least blow out of there.
Right.
And I didn't get a shot at either one of them. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I've had other deer, mature does and small bucks get downwind of me and just kind of like stick their nose in the air, mm-hmm, and not know exactly what it was and then just keep walking.
Right.
I don't know, like, mature deer, like 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds, what they would do. But I can tell you right now that those 2 4-year-olds, the first one, he just kind of like stuck his nose in the air and was like, I'm not bedding here.
Right. Yeah. And we're going to
work off to the next bed. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like we're going to get killed here, but we're just not going to bed right here. You know what I mean? Kind of deal.
And I think that's what some products can do, is they can buy you 3 seconds, you know what I mean? To get an opportunity, right? Where otherwise you may not. Right. And so I think that's what they're capable of. Cause I ran one for a season and I had similar experience to you, where it's like, I had some, you know, in my experience, I had some younger deer get downwind of me and it fooled them for long enough. You know what I mean? Or, you know, and maybe, you know, I didn't drop milkweed at the moment. And maybe if I would have, maybe the current was going somewhere else. And maybe it was just my wind that was beating them at that point. You know, I don't know exactly, but I did use it and I did see a similar effect. The other thing that I've had happen though too, is that without a whole lot of wind, I had a pool basically at the bottom of my tree, and I've had deer come in and just kind of be like, whoa, there's a lot of something here. I'm going to get out of here. You know what I mean? Where like it actually spooked them, like the unit itself spooked them, you know? Mm-hmm. Cause it wasn't my ground scent, cause they weren't there yet. You know, they didn't get there to where I kind of accessed the tree. And the only thing that could have been possible is that they were smelling that, you know, ozone or whatever that was pulling at the bottom of the tree that was just super saturated, you know, and they were like, whoa, that's weird. That doesn't seem right.
Too much of something.
Yeah. Too much of something. Yeah. Whatever it was too much of something. And so I just ended up like, what I do like it for is cleaning my clothes in between hunts. I use it religiously for that.
Okay.
You know, it's like, for sure. You know, it's like, that's 100%. I use it after every hunt, you know, especially when I'm on those travel hunts and can't wash my clothes or anything like that. You know, it's, you know, that's what I'm using. But I stopped carrying it just in general, cause I was like, I don't know if it's buying me enough. And, you know, all the encounters that I've had since, it's like, I've actually had better encounters. You know, and so I was just like,
I've thought about selling my Ozonics, but a buddy of mine, not DJ Rutledge, but another buddy, Steve, he swears by it. And this guy is a killer. Really? I mean, he is another killer. You know what I mean? A public land guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes all over the country, actually into Canada hunting, and he swears by him. And he's like, no. Definitely something that will change the way you hunt, dude. It definitely will. And yeah, he swears by him. And you know, you got to go with, sometimes you got to go with what experienced guys will tell you.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I bought it. Cause I thought, I'm hunting with a recurve now. I got to get as close as I possibly can. You know, the $450 on this whole setup, is it, you know, could it buy me a yard or a few seconds or whatever? You know what I mean? I bought it.
Yep.
And, yeah. You know, has it changed anything? I don't think I would have killed the nine pointer in 2019. I really don't.
Right.
I think they would have both spooked. You know what I mean? But
yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing too, man. It's like confidence in your gear, man. So say that it doesn't work at all. The fact that you mm-hmm. have confidence in the fact that you will, that you feel like you'll get an extra second or two to make the, to take the opportunity, that sometimes mm-hmm. is the difference. You know what I mean? It's like, it's the thing between your ears, right? It's like, it's making that thing think you can, you know, sometimes is how you win.
Like I said, it goes against everything that I possibly can fathom and think and know about what I've seen deer do, but for some reason it seems like that one specific time it did kind of work, but maybe it didn't, you know what I mean? Maybe it was just, but dude, I was dropping milkweed all morning and it was going
yeah. exactly
and the wind didn't change, you know what I mean? It was just
So, man, I've kept you hostage here, man, for like a little, we're coming up on almost 2 hours, dude. I could talk to you for another 2 hours, but I want to ask you one last question before I let you get out of here, if you're game for it.
Yep.
So I always kind of like to end on this when I heard, you know, Chad did this to me on like on the Exodus podcast at one point, and I kind of stole it from them because I thought it was a really good question. And I always like to ask guys this now, kind of a little bit, put them on the spot, but it also, I'm just always curious what the answer is. If you had to build a team of hunters, say like a 3-on-3 tournament, right? That you were the coach of, and you could pick any three hunters to put on your team, whether they are public land hunters, whether they are private land hunters, whether they are dead, alive, whether you know them or not, doesn't matter, right? You had mm-hmm. to pick three people to drop on any parcel of land anywhere, and that they would be able to fill tags better than any other team that they might go up against. Who would those three hunters be?
Okay, first of all, DJ Rutledge.
Mm-hmm.
He's number one. And you guys, nobody in your audience knows who he is, but he's a freaking killer. The guy's killed 300 turkeys. With bows, guns, 410s, he's done it all.
Jeez.
And he kills 140-inch deer every single year in South Jersey, and he travels and does it in other states as well.
Yeah.
I've put another South Jersey guy, Steve Nanook is what his handle is. I put him number two, and a guy that I've always loved, and I have a lot of respect for him as a person. He's not a public land hunter, so but I still love him. Bill Winky, Bill Winky is a killer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
I would put my two local guys up against everybody from every other place. Johnny Stewart, just because I know what Greg says about him.
Right.
Johnny Stewart is probably right there as well, because he's a public land. He does it on public land as well. Bill Winky, I think Bill Winky killed deer on public land just as quick as he can on his private land.
Bill's got a system, man. Like he's a good hunter mm-hmm. for whatever people might want to think or say about him or whatever. The dude knows his stuff when it comes to hunting deer. Like he's just observed deer for so long. Yeah. You know what I mean? That he understands them. Right. And that's like, once you get to a certain point like that, it's like, I would say like another guy like that, you know, who I have a lot of respect for is Don Higgins. Right. It's like, you know, just kills monster deer, and you can say, yeah, he's killing them on farms or whatever, blah, blah, you know, mm-hmm. but it's like, look, the guy has forgotten more about deer than I'll probably ever know. You know, and that's
a lot of those guys too. A lot of those guys too. The only reason why they don't hunt public is because they understand they want to be able to control the time that they do have to hunt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to say that, you know what I mean? Like the guys that do hunt public all the time, all mm-hmm. of us that do, we have to deal with it every single day.
Yeah.
And the stuff that that, and you know, Bill, I think in this year, Bill is learning a little bit more. He's hunting, handshake, stuff because he sold his farm and stuff, his big farm and stuff like that. He's learning a little bit more about it. And he's not that he's never done it in the past. He just knows enough about deer that he can kill deer no matter where he goes, but he's probably doesn't want to screw the time up that he does have and go and hunt the public land he has around him as well.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, but, DJ Rutledge, at some point I got to put you in touch with him.
Clint, I was just going to, we can talk. We can.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was just going to say, we'll have to talk about that when we hang up here. Cause that sounds like a guy I might need to talk to, but
he's the guy when I go and I leave my house, it doesn't matter if I'm going to Delaware, Maryland, if I'm going to Pennsylvania, if I'm in anywhere in South Jersey, I'll send him my pin on the area that I'm going, because he's the only person that will ever be able to find me if I die out there. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I send him, seriously, I send him pins and say, dude, I'm paddling back in here. You know how hunts go. This is where I want to be, but if things change, I'm going to be somewhere in this swamp.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he, okay, no problem. Just send me a couple updates throughout the day. So just in case something happens,
right.
You know what I mean? He's a duck hunter and you know what I mean? Like he could be there in South Jersey. He could be there in 40 minutes. He'd find me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like
that's
how much confidence I have in DJ Rutledge. He is a freaking killer.
Nice.
So,
well, awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, dude. We'll have to do another one with me, you, and Greg together. We'll have to get together sometime and hang out and do one in person and chop it up and maybe hit the timber or something together one of these days.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on, brother. You have yourself a good night.
You too. Thanks, Clint.
All right, folks, that is a wrap for today's show. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. And if you haven't yet, please head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating. And hell, while you're at it, head over to YouTube and give us a sub there, too. I'd be super appreciative if you'd be able to do those two things for me. And before I shut this thing down, I need to give a big shout out to our partners who continue to help us make this podcast possible. Tethered, Exodus Outdoor Gear, Skull Brew Coffee Company, and Maven Optics. And until next time, we'll see y'all. All right, gang, the new Truth merch is in stock at truthfromthestand.com and on YouTube below any of the Truth from the Stand videos. I've got some new hats, beanies, t-shirts, long sleeve t-shirts, and sweatshirts. There's even a new do hard shit hat for those of us who like to embrace microdosing adversity. So head to truthfromthestand.com and check out the new gear and use the code TRUTH, TRUTH, and save yourself some cash on the new gear.